Edward Kelly was once hailed as a symbol of loyalty and defiance. A Marine veteran turned Capitol rioter, he stood among the wave of men who claimed they stormed the halls of democracy for their country. And when the presidential pardon came down, wiping his record clean, he told reporters, "I'm just getting started." He wasn't lying. Less than a year later, Kelly was back in court. But this time, it wasn't for trespassing or protest. It was for conspiracy to murder federal agents, plotting to blow up an FBI office, and keeping a kill list with names of real people, judges, agents, and officials. The same man who had been pardoned for storming the Capitol was now facing life in prison for something darker, something far more calculated. What happened between that pardon and the plot? Who helped him? And why didn't anyone stop him sooner? This isn't about politics. It's about what happens when a pardon becomes a license to escalate. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Edward Kelly didn't fit the stereotype. He wasn't just another loud protester waving a flag and taking selfies in the Capitol. He was trained, focused, dangerous in ways most wouldn't immediately notice. A Marine Corps veteran from Maryville, Tennessee, Kelly had served honorably by most accounts. But when the war ended overseas, another one was brewing inside him. By the time January 6, 2021 arrived, Kelly was already radicalized. He'd spent the months leading up to the insurrection deep in conspiracy forums, attending local militia meetings, and spreading rhetoric that echoed darker, more violent corners of the internet. Friends and neighbors later described him as devoted and intense. One even said, "You couldn't tell if he was preaching the Constitution or preparing for war." The Capitol breach was chaotic for most, but for Kelly, it was methodical. Surveillance footage showed him moving through the building with purpose, scanning exits, communicating with others, and carrying what investigators called an unauthorized weapon. He wasn't looting or live streaming. He was assessing. He was arrested. Martyr. A movement often grows stronger. It wasn't over. Not even close. For weeks, the nation waited. As the headlines blared, "Pardoned patriot gets life in prison," the one voice that remained conspicuously silent was the man who signed the pardon, the former president of the United States. He had not spoken during the trial, not after the conviction, and not even after Kelly was sentenced to life behind bars. But the pressure was mounting, and even silence was starting to sound like guilt. Then came July 4th, 2025. The same date Kelly had once chosen for Operation Liberty Storm, the date that nearly marked a domestic tragedy, was now being used by reporters, critics, and survivors to force a reckoning. Mounting pressure. The president's social media feed stayed quiet. No public remarks, no interviews. But behind closed doors, sources inside his camp said staff were scrambling. Legal advisors warned that any acknowledgement could backfire. Others argued silence looked worse. Eventually, his team crafted a single-paragraph press statement. It read, "I granted pardons to individuals involved in the January 6th events in the spirit of reconciliation and unity. Any subsequent actions taken by those individuals are their own responsibility and do not reflect the intent of my administration." The reaction was swift and brutal. Media outlets labeled it evasive. Victims' families called it a deflection. Legal experts pointed out what it avoided. Any admission of responsibility, any regret, any human empathy. And most critically, it avoided Edward Kelly's name. The reckoning public opinion was shifting. A poll conducted days after the statement showed that 68% of Americans believe the pardon program contributed to future acts of violence. Nearly half supported tighter limits or judicial review for future clemency powers. In Congress, a bipartisan bill titled the Accountability and Clemency Act was introduced. It proposed a 72-hour delay on mass pardons, mandatory background reviews, and the exclusion of individuals already under federal investigation for unrelated crimes. Edward Kelly had become a catalyst, not because he planned it, but because he proved what unchecked power can unleash. A man forgotten. Back in prison, Kelly was placed in solitary confinement due to the threat level surrounding his case. He received no visitors, no letters beyond legal correspondence. His name was now radioactive, even among those who once praised him. But inside extremist circles, whispers grew louder. They believed he was sacrificed. They believed he was proof that the system couldn't be trusted. They believed he was right. And that's what scared investigators most. Because while the president dodged cameras and prepared for the next election cycle, intelligence analysts watched message boards light up with new plots, new targets, and new recruits. Kelly may have been silenced, but his story had become a signal, one that reached people far outside the courtroom, and it was still echoing. The courtroom had gone quiet. The reporters packed their bags. The president had moved on. But long after the verdict, long after Edward Kelly was locked away behind concrete and steel, the questions remained. And they were bigger than one man. Because the Kelly case didn't just expose a violent plot, it exposed a fault line in the very idea of justice. It forced the country to look at itself and ask, what happens when we forgive too soon? And who pays the price when we get it wrong? The ripple effect. In the months following the trial, dozens of federal employees, those once on Kelly's kill list, testified in private briefings to Congress. Some were agents. Some were prosecutors. Some were simply clerks who had touched Capitol riot paperwork. They shared the same fear that the justice system had failed them by freeing a man who was already preparing for war. "I swore an oath to this country," said one female field agent. "I never thought I'd need protection from someone we already arrested, someone we already pardoned." Some of those employees moved to different assignments. Some left government work entirely. The trauma, they said, didn't end when Kelly was sentenced. It just changed shape. The reform that followed, by early 2026, Congress passed the Presidential Pardon Accountability Act, a rare bipartisan victory. It didn't take away clemency powers, but it did require a classified national security assessment for any pardon tied to terrorism, sedition, or conspiracy. Pardons would still be possible, but not invisible. The law was nicknamed the Kelly Rule. His name had become a warning. A country still divided. Yet not everyone saw Kelly the same way. In some corners of the country, he remained a symbol, a martyr wrapped in military service, anti-government rhetoric, and a twisted sense of patriotism. A documentary titled The Man They Feared premiered online, casting doubt on the FBI's case and painting Kelly as a scapegoat. It was quickly taken down for violating platform policies, but it had already been shared thousands of times. At rallies, his name was occasionally chanted, not by the masses, but by enough people to remind America that this kind of ideology never really disappears. It just changes shape. It hides until the next trigger. Before his sentencing, Edward Kelly had been asked if he wanted to speak. He declined. But months later, in a handwritten letter leaked to the press, he wrote a single line. "I was ready to die for what I believed in, because I believed I'd already been betrayed." That one sentence became the headline. It was dissected, debated, condemned. But to those who understood the stakes, it wasn't surprising. Because betrayal, real or imagined, is how men like Kelly begin. And silence, delay, or unchecked power is how they're allowed to continue. Edward Kelly didn't just exploit a pardon. He exposed the fragility of systems built on trust. He reminded us that justice delayed can become justice denied, and that second chances, when given without caution, can come with a deadly price. And so the real question now is this: who's already planning the next Liberty Storm? Shortly after, charged with unlawful entry and violent conduct on Capitol grounds, but the full weight of his military background and what he had planned never made it into that initial report. The pardon. In January 2025, Edward Kelly's case took a dramatic turn. On the final day of a controversial presidential term, over 500 individuals involved in the Capitol riot received full pardons. Kelly's name was on that list. He walked out of court a free man. Cameras swarmed him outside the courthouse. He stood tall in a crisp blazer, American flag pin on his lapel, and declared, "I served my country once, and I'm ready to do it again. We're not done." For many watching, it was just bluster. Another soundbite in the culture war. But behind those words was something more dangerous. A man who had just been handed a second chance, one he never earned, and one he would weaponize. Under the radar, federal officials admitted they kept tabs on Kelly after his release, but without active charges or warrants, there was little they could legally do. He returned to Tennessee, resumed contact with extremist groups, and started building something bigger. Neighbors began noticing unusual activity. Late-night deliveries, hushed meetings in the backyard, long drives out to rural sites in the Smoky Mountains. But no one reported him. He was, after all, a veteran. A pardoned man. A patriot, as one neighbor said. But Kelly wasn't planning a protest this time. He was planning an attack. A veteran with a new mission. What the public didn't know, what hadn't yet been uncovered, was that Kelly had already started compiling what prosecutors would later call a kill list. Federal agents, judges, even political staffers involved in counter-extremism investigations. Their names were written down, paired with home addresses, photos, and surveillance notes. And Kelly wasn't working alone. By mid-2025, he had built a small circle of followers, most of them men like him. Disillusioned veterans, former cops, men who had served the country and returned with scars, both physical and psychological. Kelly gave them purpose. He gave them a new enemy. They weren't just angry at the government. They were ready to strike it down. The calm before the storm. To the outside world, Kelly was calm, even humble. He attended local church services, posted online about freedom and faith, volunteered at a veteran outreach center, shaking hands with the very people who would one day be targets on his list. But beneath the surface, the countdown had begun. Federal investigators didn't know it yet, but they would soon uncover bomb materials, encrypted chats, and a disturbing plan to attack the Knoxville FBI field office using military-style tactics. Car bombs, distraction devices, drone surveillance, coordinated escape routes, all orchestrated by a man the country had just forgiven, all set in motion by a pardon that many believed was political theater. Kelly saw it differently. To him, it was permission. And the war he couldn't finish abroad? He was bringing it home. The first sign something was wrong came from a tip, anonymous, vague, and nearly dismissed. It was April 2025 when the Knoxville FBI field office received an encrypted message from a former militia member. He claimed someone was building a team, not just to protest, not to post online, but to kill. The name dropped in that message made agents pause. Edward Kelly. By then, Kelly had already served his time. His record for the Capitol riot had been wiped clean by the January pardon. He was supposed to be just another former inmate trying to rebuild his life, but the Bureau had doubts. And now, they had a reason to follow them. The tip described meetings at a cabin deep in Blount County. No cell signal, no cameras. Just woods, silence, and men training in tactical gear. The witness claimed there were explosives, real ones, drones being tested, military jargon being tossed around like doctrine. Most disturbing of all, he said Kelly wasn't just training men, he was giving orders. Surveillance begins. FBI agents requested quiet authorization to begin limited surveillance. Drones were deployed, satellite photos were reviewed. And what they saw matched the claims. Masked men moving through obstacle courses. Trucks with military decals arriving late at night. Camo tents, maps, target boards. But what was missing was intent. Without a confirmed threat or crime, there was no legal basis for arrest. That changed when one of Kelly's followers slipped up. In May 2025, a 28-year-old ex-Marine named Travis Bennett was pulled over for speeding near Oak Ridge. Inside his vehicle, officers found a burner phone, three loaded firearms, and a printed map of the Knoxville FBI office with handwritten notations and entry points. He said nothing, not to police, not to lawyers, but the phone spoke for him. Inside it, FBI cyber analysts discovered encrypted conversations between Bennett and a contact named Patriot 6, a handle linked to Edward Kelly. The chats were filled with military strategy and timelines. And then came the phrase that changed the case. July 4th, Operation Liberty Storm. Knoxville goes dark. Building a case. Suddenly, this wasn't speculation. It was domestic terrorism in motion. The FBI fast-tracked a classified task force. Surveillance was expanded. Wiretaps approved. What agents uncovered was worse than they'd imagined. Kelly's group had acquired ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, components for homemade bombs. They had studied the Oklahoma City bombing. They had mapped out every entrance to the FBI field office. They had even tested drone-mounted explosives at a remote quarry in Roane County. And most disturbing of all, Kelly had compiled a kill list. The list included the names of at least 15 federal employees. Some were judges, some agents, some prosecutors. Each had ties to Capitol riot investigations. Several had publicly criticized the January pardons. It wasn't just an act of rebellion. It was revenge. The clock is ticking. As the July 4th date approached, agents knew they were running out of time. But they had a problem. The group was tight. Paranoid. Communications were often face-to-face. There were no official organizations, no signed pledges, just loyalty, fear, and silence. The FBI needed a break, and they got it from someone inside. One of Kelly's recruits, a man known only by the code name Frost, approached the bureau through a defense attorney. He agreed to wear a wire, not for money, not for leniency, but because he said Kelly was preparing to do something no patriot should ever do. With Frost embedded in the group, the FBI began receiving real-time recordings, audio of Kelly assigning roles, describing how they would trigger the distraction bomb in the parking lot, then ambush responding agents with AR-15s, how they'd detonate the main blast after the office was evacuated to maximize damage. And then there was Kelly's voice, calm and clear. The Capitol was a warning. This will be a reckoning. The arrest. June 28, 2025, the day the plan was set to be rehearsed in full. Before dawn, federal agents moved in. Kelly was arrested outside a gas station in Sevierville, calmly sipping a coffee in tactical boots and a veteran's ball cap. His vehicle contained a loaded rifle, two burner phones, a drone, and a sealed envelope containing instructions titled Liberty Storm, Final Phase. 11 others were arrested in coordinated raids across 3 counties. Inside the cabin, agents found detonators, explosives, maps, and a whiteboard with FBI staff names and courthouse blueprints. There were no flags, no slogans, just the cold logistics of a domestic terror operation. Kelly said nothing during arrest, but in his pocket, folded tightly, was the pardon letter from January 20th. He had carried it with him the entire time. The courtroom was silent. When Edward Kelly entered wearing a federal jumpsuit and shackles, the air shifted. Cameras weren't allowed inside, but reporters outside said you could feel it, like watching a man who'd carried 2 versions of himself, the Patriot and the Predator. This wasn't just another Capitol riot case. It wasn't political theater. This was a terrorism trial, and at the center of it was a man the president had already forgiven once. A nation watches. The federal courthouse in Knoxville was packed. Prosecutors, security teams, journalists from every major network, they all gathered for the start of United States versus Edward Kelly, a case that would test the boundaries of presidential power, national security, and justice itself. The government's argument was clear. This was not about free speech, not about January 6th. This was about a premeditated armed conspiracy to kill federal agents, a plan crafted, trained for, and nearly executed. Kelly's defense? It hinged on the pardon. His lawyers argued that his arrest was a form of political retaliation, that the pardon he received for his role in January 6th extended, if not legally, then philosophically, to the motivations behind Operation Liberty Storm. They said Kelly believed he had authorization to continue the fight. The judge didn't buy it, and neither did the jury. The evidence unfolds. Over 4 weeks, the prosecution revealed a staggering web of evidence. Audio tapes recorded by the FBI informant group chats detailing bomb placements and tactical movements, satellite imagery of the training compound, blueprints of the Knoxville FBI office with Kelly's handwriting, photos of car bombs being constructed in the cabin, and then came the bombshell. One FBI agent took the stand and confirmed the existence of video surveillance from inside the compound. It showed Kelly speaking directly to his team. His words were slow and deliberate. A pardon is not an apology. It's permission. If they let us go once, they won't stop us the next time. They're afraid. And fear is how you win a war. The jury watched in silence. Kelly never flinched. The kill list. When prosecutors revealed the kill list, the room gasped. Names of 15 federal employees, each paired with a photo, home address, and notes. One had children. Another was scheduled to testify in a Capitol riot-related trial the following month. All of them were connected to the justice system Kelly believed had betrayed him. He had targeted them personally, not out of impulse, but with military precision. One victim's spouse took the stand, hands trembling, and said he wanted to blow up the people protecting this country, after swearing an oath to do the same. The courtroom fell quiet again. That silence would return, again and again, as each layer of the plan was revealed. The defense crumbles Kelly's legal team tried to distance him from the explosives, claimed he never handled the actual materials, argued that much of the plan was talk, not intent, but too much evidence said otherwise. The audio tapes, the maps, the messages, the wire transfer receipts for bomb components, and the speech he made just days before the planned attack, recorded by drone surveillance. We don't fight for pardons, we fight for power, and once the bombs go off, they'll realize we've already taken it. It was over. The verdict. On November 19, 2024, after just 4 hours of deliberation, the jury returned a verdict. Guilty on all counts. Conspiracy to murder federal employees, attempted use of a weapon of mass, destruction solicitation to commit a crime of violence, threats against federal officials. The sentencing hearing was set for July 2, 2025, but for Edward Kelly, the war was already lost. His supporters outside the courthouse tried to spin it, called him a political prisoner, said it was deep state revenge, but the evidence wasn't political. It was concrete, calculated, cold, and the justice system, for once, moved swiftly. The heat was unbearable. It was July-August 2025, and the temperature outside the federal courthouse in Knoxville matched the tension inside it. The crowd had doubled in size. Reporters swarmed. Protesters clashed with counter-protesters. But inside the courtroom, the world narrowed to one man, Edward Kelly, the former Marine, the pardoned Capitol rioter, the man now convicted of plotting to kill federal agents, and today he would hear his fate. The final stand. Kelly walked into court in shackles, shoulders squared, face expressionless. He made no effort to look at the crowd behind him. No nods, no gestures, just a straight walk to the defense table like a soldier reporting for orders. The prosecution wasted no time. This man wasn't simply angry. He was organized, trained, and obsessed with violence, the lead prosecutor said, her voice steady. He betrayed his oath. Then he used his pardon not as a second chance, but as fuel. He planned to kill our agents. He planned to blow up our office. He had the materials, the maps, the orders. He even chose a date, Independence Day. Her final words echoed, "If Edward Kelly walks free again, people will die." The defense offered one last plea. They asked the judge for leniency based on Kelly's military service and mental deterioration post-deployment. They claimed trauma, instability, and the influence of extremist echo chambers. But the judge had heard enough. The judge speaks U.S. District Judge Harriet Lomax had overseen federal cases for nearly 3 decades. She was known for her calm demeanor and firm judgments. Today, her words were unshakable. You were given mercy, she said, locking eyes with Kelly. You were pardoned for a crime that shook this nation, and you responded to that mercy with a plot to commit mass murder. She paused. You did not seek healing. You sought blood. Then she delivered the sentence. Life in federal prison, without parole. A murmur rippled through the room. Kelly blinked once but said nothing. His attorneys quietly placed their hands on his shoulders, as if bracing him for the weight of the verdict. Then the judge added something unexpected. Let the record show that this court recognizes your service. But service is not immunity. Loyalty to your country does not mean loyalty to destruction. She looked down at the folded pardon letter prosecutors had introduced as evidence. And this pardon does not erase your crimes, it simply delayed accountability. Outside the courtroom, news broke in seconds. Breaking. Edward Kelly, sentenced to life for FBI bomb plot, lit up screens across the country. Some celebrated the ruling. Others protested it. But the nation couldn't look away. The conversation exploded across networks and social media. Should a presidential pardon be absolute? Should individuals like Kelly be treated as political victims or domestic threats? For the FBI, it was closure. For the victims on his kill list, it was safety restored. But for the public, the image that stayed wasn't the sentence. It was the moment Kelly was led away in chains, still carrying a copy of his pardon letter in his jacket pocket. Still believing, perhaps, that he was the one who'd been betrayed. The sentence was handed down, the courtroom was cleared, and Edward Kelly was transported to a federal maximum security facility in Colorado. But the story didn't end there. Across the country, the ripple effects of the Kelly case began to spread like wildfire. Through newsrooms, courtrooms, campaign trails, and living rooms. This wasn't just about a convicted man anymore. It was about the power that let him walk free once before. Pardons under fire. Within 48 hours of Kelly's sentencing, congressional committees began calling for an emergency review of presidential pardon powers. Legal analysts appeared on every major network, citing what many had feared for years, that a sweeping pardon without oversight could be weaponized. Kelly's case became Exhibit A. The pardon he received in January 2025 was part of a mass clemency order that cleared over 500 individuals linked to the January 6th Capitol riot. At the time, it was branded as a healing gesture. But in retrospect, many called it reckless. Senator Mia Delano of Illinois said it plainly. This wasn't just a legal loophole. This was a failure in judgment, and we're lucky it didn't end in mass casualty. Lawmaker after lawmaker echoed the same concern. If Kelly had not been pardoned, would this plot have even happened? Could someone else be next? Political fuel. The fallout became political fuel on both sides of the aisle. Presidential candidates weaponized the story. Some argued the pardon program was a betrayal of law enforcement. Others accused the justice system of targeting patriots. The Kelly case became the defining issue of the summer election cycle. At campaign rallies, former officials who supported the original clemency order now dodged questions. Talk show hosts ran segments titled When Pardons Kill and The Thin Line Between Mercy and Mayhem. But for many Americans, it wasn't about red or blue. It was about safety and the terrifying realization that a man once branded a hero could spiral into something far darker with nothing more than a sheet of paper in his hand. Families of the targeted. For the families on Kelly's kill list, the verdict brought some peace, but not healing. One federal agent's wife told a news anchor, "We moved twice. I pulled my kids out of school. We changed our phone numbers. For months, we lived in fear. And he was walking free, smiling in press photos. That's not justice." She paused, then added, "Now that he's gone away for good, maybe we can breathe again. But we'll never be the same." Her story wasn't unique. Prosecutors revealed that several people on the list had to be placed under temporary protection during the investigation. Some were never told they were targets until the trial began. The online underground Kelly supporters didn't vanish either. Online, his image was elevated in certain circles. Memes of him circulated, calling him a fallen warrior and a true American. Extremist forums praised him. One post read, "He took it to the deep state. They fear men like him." Federal intelligence agencies quietly launched new task forces to monitor growing domestic threats inspired by Kelly. They knew the pattern. One conviction often birthed two replacements, and with a